Chinnanivas Prabhu, on the 4th of June, on Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text
27. From the false ego of goodness, another transformation takes place. From this evolves the mind, whose thoughts and reflections give rise to desire. Please repeat. From the false ego of goodness, another transformation takes place. From this evolves the mind, whose thoughts and reflections give rise to desire. The symptoms of the mind are determination and rejection, which are due to different kinds of desires. We desire that which is favorable to our sense gratification, and we reject that which is not favorable to sense gratification. The material mind is not fixed, but the very same mind can be fixed when engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, as long as the mind is on the material platform, it is hovering, and all this rejection and acceptance is asat, temporary. It is stated that he whose mind is not fixed in Krishna consciousness must hover between acceptance and rejection. However advanced a man is in academic qualification, as long as he is not fixed in Krishna consciousness, he will simply accept and reject, and will never be able to fix his mind on a particular subject. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gurudeva Shiva Shri Om Bhakti Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram So this is the fundamental principles of material nature. Description. So here is a description how the mind is becoming manifest in the material world due to the chemical combination of different elements. The mind evolves from a mixture of promoted goodness and false ego. It mixes these two elements together and it produces a mind. These are the subtle form of the mind we can perceive. False ego and goodness is finer. So the gross, what's happening here in this description is from the how from the fine, finest is going to come the gross, right down to water and earth. So it started in the Mahatattva. The unmanifested modes of material nature, and gradually evolves down, and different elements are being produced here. Prabhupada says that In the beginning, the first state is pure consciousness. And because the modes of material nature are not really active in the very beginning, everything is there and so they just have to be agitated. In the beginning, there's pure consciousness, so the living entity actually, at the first entry, he's in pure consciousness. He says he can understand himself and he can understand the he can understand the Lord to some extent, the omnipresence of the Lord. And Prabhupada said this is a very nice feeling, a nice realization. So this is actually the goal of the jnanis, to come to this understanding. So he's perceiving, or Vasudeva, it was called Vasudeva, consciousness is called Vasudeva, the predominating deity of consciousness is Vasudeva. Of course, the living entity cannot be without consciousness. That's the nature of the soul, is consciousness. So that consciousness, when it's unmixed with anything, is called Vasudeva consciousness. So you're conscious of its original, the soul's eternal nature. So that is Vasudeva, that is the omnipresence of the Lord. You can feel that nature everywhere, you can feel His presence everywhere. So that's the very beginning. So in that state, you can also become Krishna conscious. I heard from Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, he was also quoting Sri Ram Maharaj. He was working on the Brahma Samhita, I believe, Eternal Krishna Maharaj. That gives a description also of the the creation in the Brahma Samhita. But on that point of the entry of the living entity into the Mahatattva, then there's only pure goodness, or pure consciousness is there, Vasudeva consciousness. And so he's aware of the Supreme Lord's eternal nature. They said at that time he may have another choice. Apparently Prabhupada said, I don't know if it's recorded anywhere, but he said Krishna gives you three warnings when you're in the spiritual world about coming here. And you get three chances. So they said this may be one of the chances, whether they're all together or spread. They could be on different situations from the spiritual world into the material world. It could be three different times. So I think they were indicating this could be a time when the living entity has a chance. It could also be when he's being coming in the glance, because Mahavishnu is glancing, the living entities are coming with the glance. And they're in pure consciousness at that time. So they've been awakened in the body of Mahavishnu. Everything is kind of dormant. I guess the living entity must be conscious because that's his eternal nature. But there's nothing happening there except Mahavishnu is having a dream, but they all remain, it says, like dormant. So then they come out along with the glance of Vishnu. And that glance is carried by Roma Devi. And the living entity sees Roma Devi. Very beautiful. It's adorable. Very beautiful. And she's alone. I could be her protector. I could be her. And so he goes. So they said at that time also there may be a chance, because he's actually in a pure situation just before that. Then he becomes attracted to Ramadev. So then they continue, they transform into the material. They're reflecting the material world. So anyway, it's another time it appears it's in pure consciousness. The modes of material nature have been manifested fully. So in that state of pure consciousness then appears the false ego. The false ego is the dictation of Shankarshan. And this is the feeling that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So when the living entity appeals his dictation, generally he will accept it, because actually he has this desire from previous to be the controller and the enjoyer from previous birth, before he went back into the body of Vishnu. And so then he accepts, oh, that's what I want. So then the false ego covers him. So then now his consciousness becomes covered. Now all he's got to work with now is a covered consciousness. He's forgotten his pure consciousness, and he's working with the covered consciousness, which is simply the false ego. And now everything he's doing is coming through the false ego. And so everything evolves, and we see how we could become completely entangled in this material world, really lost to our real identification, identifying with the present bodies, etc. So it's very difficult to see very clearly, because everything is manifested through the, our vision is coming through the false ego, and all the products that are in the material world are manifested also from the false ego. Just here is the mind is taking place, it mixes with goodness. The false ego and goodness produces the mind. The false ego in passion produces the intelligence. So, with all these things, with the mind, and then the demigods come, and then the senses come, then all the objects of the material world come. So Prabhupada said, you see, everything is actually simply a manifestation from false ego and mixture of elements. Everything. So everything we're dealing with is actually a manifestation of false ego, the whole material cosmic manifestation. It says that the false ego is the same as the senses and the sense objects, because it's their creator. Because it's a subtle beginning. As soon as we accept the false ego, then the mind appears, then everything, the intelligence, and then all the senses and everything else starts to appear, and the whole universe evolves. Prabhupada said it's like how the material world is manifested. It's like when you roll out a carpet. You have a rolled up carpet, you just roll it out. You roll it out, and the whole universe is automatically, it's just coming. It doesn't take such a long time. And it's complete. It's like you roll the carpet out, you see the beautiful designs and everything. So the material creation just unfolds like that, and it's there. So everything is produced from the false ego. And it's the same as the ego, it says, because the ego is the source of all that. If it wasn't in the beginning, if you didn't choose the false ego, there would be no need to manifest the material mind, senses, intelligence, and material world. But because there is that desire, because of adopting the false ego, then the whole creation will take place to satisfy that desire. The false ego of goodness, from the false ego of goodness, another transformation takes place. So goodness and false ego mix together, and from this evolves the mind. And whose thoughts and reflections gives rise to desire. As soon as you've got a mind, then you're going to start desiring. So when you desire, then the whole material world is manifested. If you didn't desire, there would be no need for the material world. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the living entities, I have my fragmental parts and parcels, who are struggling hard, and who sustain the universe. It's the living entities that sustain the universe by their desire. Krishna has no need to create a material universe to come here and enjoy. He's got his own spiritual world. He's got the whole of Vaikuntha, where he can enjoy spiritually. He has no need to create a world for another world, but he does it for the living entities, to satisfy the living entities. So it's the living entities who are struggling and who sustain the universe by their desires. Is that by the living entities' desires, no other desire, that this universe is created. So, because you've got the mind and you want to use it, then okay, so here is the, what do you say, the playground, your field of activities, this material universe, how you can use your mind, intelligence, senses, etc. But they've all evolved from the false ego, mixed with the modes, goodness, passion and ignorance. The whole material cosmos has come into creation. So, it's a subtle source of all the grosser elements. So it's very difficult to understand how we're bound up in this material world unless we have the information like this from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's impossible actually to understand such fine principles. Because what we're dealing with, what we're trying to deal with, to understand, is the mind and senses, which are creations of the false ego. So what is created generally cannot understand the creator. The creator was existing before the creation. So it's practically impossible to understand. So here he's talking about the functions of the mind. And here Prabhupada says, the symptoms of the mind are determination and rejection, or acceptance and rejection, or what I like and what I don't like. Oh, here is Roma Devi. She's very attractive and she's alone, she's unaccompanied. I like. And things I don't like. I don't like the suffering in this material world. So, this is the nature of the mind. I like things that please my senses, and I don't like things that don't please my senses. So this is what's actually happening, even though we can't see it, because we're bewildered by this. But it's the fact that everything you see, that the mind checks it out and says, well, I like it or I don't like it. Everything you see. It's a fact. We're making an offering for Krishna and we're thinking that, no, this is for Krishna's pleasure. But actually, as long as one's in material, or is not free from the influence of material, that you can understand that your things you're looking at subtly, oh, I like that fruit, I don't like that one so much. Everything you do and see, you will accept or reject. Everything. It's like a checkpoint. You go through the customs. They want to check everything out, you know. So everything we see, we check it out. Do I like it or... So therefore we accept some things, reject. That's all that's going on, acceptance and rejection. What I don't like, what I like and what I don't like. And according to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this acceptance and rejection, this is the intervening distance between the living entity and the lotus feet of Krishna. That's all. If you want to know what's stopping your relationship with Krishna, it is this acceptance and rejection, that's all. We're accepting something you like and something that what I like or I don't like. What I like, what I don't like. So Prabhupada's pointing out here that that very same mind that rejects and accepts, it can be fixed, it can be fixed when it's engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness. So here we're fixing on one point, on Krishna consciousness, on Krishna's pleasure. So this should be our acceptance and rejection. Is this favorable for Krishna service, or it's unfavorable for Krishna service? Instead of, is this favorable for my service, for my pleasure, or is it unfavorable? So now we should reverse, or use this, it's the same mind, it's the same function, but it's, is this favorable for Krishna service, or is it unfavorable for Krishna service? If it's favorable, we can accept it, if it's unfavorable, we reject it. So its mind is still doing the same function, but now it's doing it for Krishna's satisfaction instead of my own satisfaction. So then the mind is actually fixed. It's fixed on Krishna's pleasure, either rejection or acceptance. The subject matter is Krishna's pleasure. So, as Prabhupada said, one who is not fixed in Krishna consciousness, he must hover. His mind will always be hovering between acceptance and rejection. However advanced the man is in academic qualification, as long as he is not fixed in Krishna consciousness, he will simply accept and reject, and will never ever to fix the mind on a particular subject matter. So that we can see practically. Every day you see, say, you pick up a newspaper and you're going to see so many people have a problem with some particular thing. So there's how to solve this problem. There's two parties. So what they do, generally they'll just compromise. We compromise, try to satisfy one party who's too upset about something. So a little bit of compromisation goes on. They don't actually solve the problem. But they compromise. And so they did it, but they're still not complete. Everyone, both sides are completely not satisfied. But they compromise a little bit. So they go like this until, and then the next thing comes along. Material nature presents another topic, another subject. Oh, then you take your minds off that and you put it on this topic. You see, every time you see in the newspaper, there's a big topic going on. And to solve the problem, they will have to just compromise. One party has to compromise a little bit like that. They're not solving the problem. Some are accepting, some are rejecting. But then another problem comes along and that becomes a matter of discussion, and that's all that's going on. But nobody ever solves the problem, as Prabhupada says it. They'll be forever on this platform of accepting and rejecting. You will have your opinion about something, I'll have my opinion about something. So it's impossible to become fixed, for the mind to become fixed as long as it's in the material world, because that's just its function. It'll accept and reject. And one man's food is another man's poison. So there's going to be disagreements. What I'm accepting, you will reject. What you're rejecting, I may accept. So how can we come to a proper understanding, a proper conclusion? So it'll never be there. You can see that practically. They never work it out where everybody's perfectly satisfied. They just wait until the next topic comes up, which Maya is very expert in presenting. She's always presenting something new, something new, something new, something to absorb yourself, something to argue about. And so like this, it goes on proper. So however academically qualified you are, still you can't understand what's going on. You cannot see the woods or the trees. So here Prabhupada is saying the only solution is actually Krishna consciousness. If we can fix our mind on Krishna consciousness in accepting activities that are favorable for Krishna consciousness and rejecting activities that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. So this is the practice. Now we're in the stage of practice, Prabhupada said. It's not just because we join the society. Now we're devotees. No, it's still a practice because we still have that old mentality is still there. The mentality is not purified. We can purify our activities by using everything in service, but still that consciousness is there. So it's a practice. So it's a slow process of purification. Prabhupada said my students are practicing chanting Hare Krishna. So we were preaching the holy name, how great it is, it's transcendental. No, we may not have realized that. So Prabhupada said my students are practicing chanting Hare Krishna. Until the clearing stage and the offensive stage is gone. Then you can actually chant Hare Krishna. Have some meaning, some feeling. So, like that in all activities, it's a devotional practice. The process of sadhana is actually a practice. Because sadhana is not perfection. The sadhana is to help us come to a perfection. Sadhana is never forgetting Krishna. We've forgotten Krishna. Now we're performing activities never to forget Krishna. And perfection is always remember Krishna. Then we don't have to practice rules to never forget Krishna. Because we can't always remember Krishna all the time. Then we have all these different kinds of sadhana to help us remember Krishna. So therefore the whole day is scheduled in regulation to help us never forget Krishna. So that's our situation. We're still dealing with these material functions, and because our intelligence is still sticking to the same old conceptions of stemming from, you know, what I like and what I don't like. This is the basic principle in this material world, aham, ameti, I and mine. What I like, what I don't like. So that is a material conception. Bhishma Dev is talking to Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he makes the prakram in the Navadvipa Taranga. And he says, as long as your intelligence still sticks to these material identities, then you have to practice your sadhana very, very strictly. So even though we know the philosophy and everything, but for realization, that's something different. Our intelligence still tends to stick to material identity. We're still identifying this body and so many other things. This material identification is still sticking there. We haven't perfected our practice. So he said, as long as you haven't perfected it, stick very strictly to the principles of sadhana bhakti. Because the process of sadhana bhakti has been given by the eternally liberated souls as a very effective person who have forgotten Krishna. So therefore, this is all very good, all this information here, the fundamental principles of material nature, how we got here, how we came in, how we're stuck here, and how we have to get out of this material world. And that way out is by simply serving Krishna. Simply have to accept the service of Krishna. What is favorable for Krishna's service? That's all we have to do. Someone was asking me a question yesterday. We were talking about how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, the Sankirtan movement, he came to establish his mission in every town and village of the world, but he didn't complete his mission. He preached in India, but he never went to every town and village of the world. So the mission is not completed. So what we know now is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and other movements, they're continuing this mission you know, preaching in every town and village. It's a fulfillment of Lord Chaitanya's desire. So therefore, like, it's a continuation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, Sankirtan mission. It's a continuation of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we are carrying out that activity of, you know, fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's desire. So, see, the comparison was made. We're helping to do this, but we face so many obstacles. We've accepted the service of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're engaged in his service. It's an expansion of his mission, but we're always feeling problems. We have so many difficulties facing it. There's always obstacles coming up. And yet we're engaged in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, the continuation of his movement. So it's his lila, actually. And we're engaged in it, but we get so many problems. And you get a bhajananandi, and he's in Vrindavan, he's just doing bhajan, and he's remembering the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and he's feeling ecstasy. But he's not in the pastime, he's just meditating on the pastime. But he's feeling ecstasy by meditating on all the pastimes. So why is there a difference? He's only meditating on the pastime, a devotee of Lord Chaitanya's and his followers, they're actually participating in the pastime. So why doesn't this one feel ecstasy? And it's a fact. Prabhupada wasn't floating around in bliss all the time with it. We thought the gurus, you know, that some gurus were like that with their long hair and nice smiles and peaceful and everything is blissful. But Prabhupada wasn't like that, he's always in anxiety. You know, he's a resident of the spirit. He comes here, but he wasn't floating around pretending he was in some kind of ecstasy. Whatever went on in his heart, that's something different. But what he exhibited, and he had so many obstacles. He was facing so many problems, one after another. You read these old letters and things like that. It seems like he's just going through. Everyone used to turn to Prabhupada for their problems. So it was one problem after another, after another, after another. That's all he was dealing with. And yet he was, you can say he was leading the leader of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in every town and village of the world. So what is the difference? One is assisting in the leela, he's feeling problem. One is meditating on the pastimes of Radha, he's feeling bliss. He's not in the pastimes, he's just meditating. So the conclusion is, it's service. Service is the most important thing. So in the meditation practice, there's no service. You're meditating on some pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But in the mission of establishing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission all over the world, it's service. It's all about service. So if that service comes so many obstacles, so many problems, which I don't think anybody denies they don't face practically every day. There's always these problems coming up. It means actually the devotees, they consider service to be of primary importance, rather than our own happiness, our own bliss, like the bhajananandis. They're more interested in their own happiness, what they can get in meditation. Devotees, they're sacrificing them. They're actually assisting the mission. And all these problems are coming, and they're just absorbed in their service. Still there, but still we're going with our service. So here, service is the most important thing here. Service to Krishna. It's not about getting a spiritual body, not understanding all the meditating on all everything that goes on in the spiritual world and understanding that. You've got a material body, how can you serve Krishna? He's spiritual in the spiritual world. You got a material body, why don't you serve him here? You can serve here. You can't serve if you're in a spiritual body, because the spiritual is not here, you're in the wrong place. But here you've got a material body, And so you can use it for service to Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, Shikshashikam, same thing. I just want your service birth after birth. That means I don't want liberation, I don't want to go back to Godhead. You may kick me away, that means I'm not interested in embracing you and feeling so much bliss. You may kick me away. As long as I can remain your servant. So this is the underlying principle. But our whole project here, practically, it's to establish this wonderful temple that Prabhupada has told us to do, envisioned by the acharyas and ordered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is Adbhuta? But what is very, very wonderful about this? I mean, you've got 9 feet tall Panchatattva there, and Radha Madhava life size and things. You could say that's a Buddha. There's plenty of temples in India that have deities, big deities and big temples. Or you could say that the universe, the planetarium, that's going to be something very wonderful, displaying how the universe is situated, it's going to be moving, how day and night is taking place, how goddesses take place. We can say also that's extraordinary, that is a very good, that's very wonderful. But Nityananda Prabhu said, Gauranga Nitya Seva Vaikuntha. So what is actually wonderful, the service of Lord Gauranga from that temple, service to Gauranga will go all over the world. That's wonderful. In the material world where everybody's forgotten Krishna, suddenly for a little short period at least, everybody is remembering Krishna and understanding. That is a very, very wonderful thing to happen in the material world. So that's what he says. He's coming from this temple. He said, service to Gauranga will spread all over the world. How do you serve Gauranga? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram, Hare Ram. So this means the whole world will be engaged in it. So this is our mission. We're pioneers with. So we're facing difficulties, all pioneers face difficulties. But we have the service of Gauranga. Now we have to just get the proper attitude that we're doing the service. Purify the attitude that we're doing. But the thing is, we've got service to Gauranga. We've actually got service. So at least we're in our proper identity as the eternal servants of Gauranga. So, yes, service, this is the main thing. We are Nitya Krishna Das. We are the eternal servant. So we've been given this service. So despite all obstacles, all problems, they're going to come daily, weekly, monthly, whenever they're coming. We'll go on and push on this movement despite all the problems. This is our service. We want service. We're Krishna servants. That's what. Whether we get bliss or we don't get bliss. Still, we'll continue to push on the movement. So this is our mission. The Prabhupada's engaged us in service. We're engaging others in devotional service. So this is the actual satisfaction of living entity. The sole service is to assist in the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. It's not to feel pleasure by meditating on the pastimes.